Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. This is Lori Wilson with you on a beautiful April 25th. We have on our news phone, I'm going to call it a news phone or the bat phone. Let me see. We have the Josh McCoon, who is running for Secretary of State, and he's on the line today. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Hey, it worked. You know, isn't technology miraculous?
It's a wonderful thing.
Hey, you're going to be in Villa Rica today at lunchtime, right?
I am. I'm looking forward to it.
Tell everyone where you're going to be. Los Cowboys, I think, right?
That's right. We're going to be at Los Cowboys starting at 11:30. And I'm excited to have the opportunity to visit with some folks and talk to them about my vision for the Office of Secretary of State.
You know what? I don't want to sound too dumb, but sometimes it's impossible in my case. But tell us what Secretary of State does.
Well, there are really four core functions of the office. There's the Corporations Division that handles filings of corporate documents if you're forming a new business or nonprofit organization. There's the Professional Licensing Division that oversees 41 licensing boards, which handle over 100 different licenses that are issued by the state for various professions. There's, of course, Elections Administration, which is probably what most people think of when they think of the Secretary of State. And then there's Securities and Charities Regulation, which is basically ensuring that people aren't ripped off by scam artists selling bogus stock or running a fake charity. So that's really the core functions of the office.
Okay. Oh, so I'm glad I asked because, you know, that's not like what on the national level the Secretary of State at all does. So
no, in fact, early on in this campaign, I was at a campaign function with a supporter of mine who was introducing me to people, and he said, "This is Josh. We're going to get him elected Secretary of State. He's going to go around the world negotiating trade deals." And I said, no, that's Rex. At that time, it was Rex Tillerson's job. So that job's taken.
Well, okay, so tell us your qualifications to fulfill all those functions you just outlined.
I think there are really two key ones for your listeners to understand. One is I have been an attorney in private practice for 14 years. And in that time, I have dealt with the Corporations Division on behalf of clients of my law firm, forming new businesses, amending corporate documents. And then the real critical piece is that I've done quite a bit of law practice in the area of election law. I've handled election contests. I've handled ballot access cases. So I have a really clear understanding of how Georgia election law and federal election law work together. And while Secretary of State used to be a pretty sleepy office, ever since that little Bush versus Gore election in 2000 and the butterfly ballots and hanging chads and going to court, secretaries of state around the country have been sued quite often. And so I think it's really important to have a lawyer in this job who understands how election law works to better serve the people of our state. So as we go forward, we hopefully avoid getting sued. But when we are engaged in litigation, we have somebody who understands what's at stake and how best to defend the position taken by the General Assembly.
You gave us your document with your top line message, and the third one is my favorite. I'm going to read it to you and ask you to comment on it and elaborate. You say that as Secretary of State, you are committed to making Georgia the quickest state in the nation to get a job and the toughest state in the nation to cast an illegal vote. I think we're all about that. Talk about that for us, will you?
Yeah, that's really what my platform boils down to. And the first part, the jobs part, is the part that a lot of times I get some puzzled looks because they think of the Secretary of State as, you know, that's about elections. But as I mentioned earlier, there are 41 licensed professions, over 100 different licenses that are issued within those professions. And we have a great opportunity to peel back government to connect more people to the dignity of honest hard work. And the best example I can give you of that is a cosmetology license holder in our state spends on average 350 days in classroom training. And by comparison, an EMT license holder, someone who's going to be in the back of that ambulance if you have a medical emergency, on average, they spend 31 days in classroom
training. Holy cow, why the disparity? Do you know?
So, well, you know, what I would suggest to you is that we've thrown up some artificial barriers to make that cosmetology license more valuable to the people who already have it. and it also makes a lot of money for people that are running the cosmetology schools. And if you look at states around the nation, they're trying, Arizona has probably been the most successful, at peeling back some of these artificial barriers to entry. Because when we tell somebody, you're going to need to spend a year in school and you're going to have to pay thousands of dollars of tuition before you even get your foot in the door, that immediately disqualifies an awful lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and what's particularly important about this is several of these licensed professions represent opportunities for people who are perhaps stuck in a dead-end, low-wage job to start their own business and really control their own destiny and make more money and achieve their American dream. So when I say make it the fastest state in the nation to get a job, that's what I'm talking about. And then on the election side, what I'm talking about is tightening up our elections. We've issued in Georgia over 48,000 driver's licenses to illegal aliens. And when you get a driver's license, you are automatically registered to vote unless you opt out and let them know that you're not eligible to vote.
I'm sorry, I'm just reeling from the number 48,000. Did you in what period of time?
48,000 over the last 4 years.
Oh my goodness!
What happened is when President Obama issued his executive order with the sweeping deferred action for illegal aliens.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think, oh, all that did was make it so somebody wouldn't be deported, but that's not true. It also gave each and every one of these individuals a federal work permit and a Social Security card. And when you get those two documents, you become eligible in Georgia for a Georgia driver's license. And so the Department of Driver Services has issued over 48,000 of these limited-term driver's licenses, which are virtually indistinguishable from the one that you and I have.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done is we've created a situation where each and every one of these people, whether they intended to or not, may have been added to our voter rolls, and they're carrying around a valid government-issued photo ID that if they did show up at the polling place and they did present it to a poll worker, the poll worker would have no way of knowing that they were allowing and facilitating someone to vote who was not authorized to vote under Georgia law. So we've got to take that limited-term driver's license database, compare it to the statewide voter file, and purge those folks from the list. And I could also talk to you about the absentee ballot process. You know, we vote in person on election day. We have to show a photo ID. We vote early in person. We have to show a photo ID. But when we vote by absentee, we're essentially on the honor system. And in my hometown of Columbus, we had a situation 4 years ago where a lady showed up at the office with 19 absentee ballots. It turned out after an investigation was conducted, 15 of those absentee ballots were cast or attempted to be cast by residents of a nursing home who were so unwell they could not sign their name or make their mark.
Oh,
but someone filled out those applications. Someone prepared those ballots. So it's a huge gaping hole in the security of our elections. So we want to tighten that process up and increase the security of validating somebody's identity when they do vote by a paper absentee ballot. So that's what I mean when I say make Georgia the toughest state in the nation to cast in a legal vote.
How much pushback do you think you're going to have? Because I know DACA is very popular with the left.
Well, you know, we've seen in the legislature, and I've led the effort the last couple of years to at least do something about these driver's licenses to try to distinguish them in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a very powerful lobby that does not want any changes to be made. And so we're going to have to take them on. And that one of the reasons that I believe it's important to have people of principle who are going to stand up to the establishment, frankly, sometimes in both parties, is if you put somebody like that in a statewide position with that megaphone, you can educate the public. I think that a lot of people, I imagine a lot of people in your audience, don't know that Georgia's issued 48,000 driver's licenses to illegal aliens.
No, I mean, that's complete news to us, I think.
Right, and that's because a single member of the state legislature, which is what I've been for the last 8 years, one of 236 people, you know, there are only so many folks you can communicate with. When you're a statewide constitutional officer, that platform allows you to communicate with a lot of people. And I think as we educate the public on this, they're going to demand action, and we will get it.
Well, on that very, very optimistic note, we're going to take our first break. And we're going to hear from Tanner Health System. We will be back in 60 seconds, and I'm going to be asking you, Josh McCoon, to tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and all that sort of thing. And we'll be back in 60 seconds for that. Stick around.
Tanner. We're advancing health throughout West Georgia and East Alabama because we know that exceptional care isn't based on how many patients we serve, but how well we serve them. That's why we're focused on quality, delivering the best possible care for our patients. It's why we're expanding our clinical services and building new facilities to serve our growing community. And it's why we're looking beyond our hospitals and medical practices to develop sustainable wellness and preventive health programs in our region. What makes a hospital great has changed. It's not how many beds we have. It's how well we care for the neighbors who need them. Delivering the right care to every patient, every time, is how Tanner is advancing health with medicine beyond measure. Learn more at tanner.org or find a physician on our medical staff by calling 770-214-CARE.
Let's jump right back into our conversation with Josh McCoon, who is running for Secretary of the great state of Georgia. Josh, thanks so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So tell us about your family. I'm looking at your top line message in your bio, and it seems to me that you have been a super achiever since maybe, you know, birth. This is what I'm thinking.
Well, what I always like to tell people about my family background is, you know, my family moved to Georgia when my great-grandfather had the opportunity to go work at the Eagle and Phoenix Textile Mill in downtown Columbus along the banks of the Chattahoochee River. That building he worked in for 50 years is still standing. It's condos and apartments now, but when he was there, it was a key part of the textile industry that was such a big fixture of the American South for so many years. My grandfather actually dropped out of school in the eighth grade during the Depression to help take care of our family. Mm. He worked several different jobs until the war broke out, and then he enlisted in the Army. He served in the Pacific. He moved back to Columbus. He married my grandmother, who worked at Commercial Printers. And Granddad was a milkman for Wells Dairy. He was a railroad conductor for the Central Georgia Railroad back when there was passenger service between Columbus and Atlanta. And then eventually they saved up enough money to open a grocery store at 5th Avenue and 8th Street in downtown Columbus. They had several small businesses over the years. One of my earliest childhood memories, they had a laundromat, which was the last business they had before they sort of retired. And I would go there after school and help my granddad refill the Coca-Cola machine at the laundromat. They were very entrepreneurial folks. And my dad was the first member of our family to go to college. Dad worked in that same mill in the summertime to pay tuition. He went on to law school, and he's still practicing law today. He's been a lawyer for over 40 years. And then I followed in Dad's footsteps. I went to Furman University for my undergraduate education, and I tell people this is always the bad news I give in my stump speech, that I got my law degree from the University of Alabama, which is not necessarily an asset when you're running for statewide office in Georgia. But anyway, I got married in August of 2016 to the former Jacqueline Bird, and it's one of the best decisions I've ever made. And lived in Columbus most of my adult life, other than when I was offered college and law school. So that's a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of my personal background.
Well, and it sounds like the Americana that we feel such reminiscence about, right? Your grandparents and your great grandparents. Arising from the travails of the Depression to be business owners, and you are the heir of their hard work, and running for Secretary of State. I'm sure everybody's so proud of you.
Well, you know, one of the things I tell people about why I'm so interested in public affairs and politics is, you know, we've really had this extraordinary opportunity because of this country and this state. And, you know, I want everybody to have that level of opportunity. And I feel like in a lot of ways, well-meaning people have grown our government in a way that has actually created a lot of obstacles to people that want to achieve their own American dream. The example I gave you earlier about all of the layers of bureaucracy you have to navigate to become a cosmetologist in our state is just one example. So what I'm hoping to do if I'm elected is to really just get the government out of the way and create more jobs that way. The Americans for Prosperity has actually done a nationwide study, and they found 2.5 million new jobs would be created through professional licensure reform. And if we did that in Georgia, say that only created 50,000 jobs, which is a pretty low number out of that 2.5 million. That's as many jobs as Amazon is promising to bring to the Atlanta area. And, of course, they're demanding billions of dollars in economic incentives and all kinds of other strings. We can create those jobs right now just by getting government out of the way and letting people go to work.
Tell me what you think about that, about Amazon potentially coming to our area.
Well, you know, I'm a big believer in businesses. I mean, I want businesses to locate in Georgia because the best social program ever devised is a job. You know, giving somebody a job and a career that allows them to take care of themselves and their family solves an awful lot of the problems that we sometimes talk about in public policy. But we've got to ask ourselves the cost of that. In my home community of Columbus, we threw a lot of economic incentives to get NCR to locate a manufacturing plant in Columbus in 2009. They announced yesterday they're shuttering the doors and it's putting 1,000 people out of work. Mm. Now, was it worth it for the taxpayers in Columbus to spend millions of dollars to attract that business so that they were in our community for 8 years? Maybe it was, but I'm very skeptical of essentially trying to buy jobs. I'm not naive about this. I understand there's competition for these employers, but we need to be really, really skeptical when people start talking about, as some communities have, $5 billion with a B or $10 billion with a B. That's an awful big price tag that takes a long time to get the payback on. So I'm all for people coming to Georgia and creating job opportunities. I just want them to do it because we have the best tax and regulatory environment, not because we're writing a big check.
You make a lot of sense. I'm also thinking, as I read your bio, that you might be, because this is such sensible policy that you're describing, but you mentioned the progressive liberal attack. It says on the sanctity of the ballot box, but of course we've got progressive liberals attacking all sorts of institutions. You want to tell us where you're going to cross swords with those guys?
Well, you know, there are a lot of areas where we're going to see that. I mean, I think in the Secretary of State's office, it frankly will be in the elections area. I think there's a lot of bipartisan agreement on licensure reform. I think there's bipartisan agreement on making our corporations' filing process as painless and as fast as we possibly can. But obviously, there's a big disagreement between some far left, and frankly, in a lot of cases, out-of-state groups, and those of us on the Republican side about elections administration. This is my philosophy on elections administration. Elections need to be fair and honest. You need to have confidence in the outcome of the election. And we need to make it very difficult for people to cheat in that process. I really don't think that should be controversial. But for the far left, they believe that photo ID is an unfair restriction on the franchise. They feel that we should have same-day voter registration.
Oh, my goodness.
You talk to any elections official, whether they're on the right or the left, they're going to tell you that creates an administrative nightmare for them. And so, you know, on those issues, we're not going to agree. And I'm going to stand up to them when they file these lawsuits in court, whether it's on getting rid of our 30-day voter registration window, whether it's trying to force communities to print ballots in multiple foreign languages and offer translators at the polls. You know, Gwinnett County is spending $750,000 a year accommodating foreign language at the polls. And, you know, when you become an American citizen, you take a test to become a citizen that involves demonstrating competency in the English language. When I go around the state talking about this issue, the people who get angriest about it are new Americans who say, you know, wait a minute, I had to sit for this test. I had to learn the language. Why should there be some accommodation made for folks? In fact, the only translation I think that ought to be occurring on our ballots has to do with the constitutional amendments that we sometimes see the legislature put on there that are in some language that isn't English. It needs to be in plain English. But on those issues, back to your question, you know, you've got to have somebody who's a fighter and who's willing to say, you know, if we've got to go to court over something, I'm going to do it. If I've got to go out into the public and have a robust debate about it, I'm going to do it. Who's not going to be afraid of the left's tactics, which is to, you know, to call names and to try to get away from the rational public policy discussion. Because in a rational public policy discussion about these issues, the positions that I've taken and the Republican Party's champion, they're going to win every time.
Mm-hmm.
So you've just got to have somebody who's willing to calmly stand their ground and make the case. And I think I'm very well prepared to do that.
You're going to take a lot of arrows because, you know, you were talking about all the calls. Well, Gwinnett County, for example, you know, the accommodation for non-English speakers. And it's maybe I'm wrong, and we do have to go to a break, but if my last question before the break is, wouldn't that by definition mean that these voters who can't speak English haven't done the work to become citizens?
I mean, I would agree with that. And I think there's some federal law that plays into this, which, again, having the election lawyer with the election law background is important. And that's something the Secretary of State is going to need to do with other secretaries of state around the nation. We've got a Republican president, Republican Congress. We need to bring some sanity back to elections administration and some of the federal law that we're having to administer. And that's something I'm looking forward to doing as the next Secretary of State.
Well, we're looking forward to the next segment. We've got more questions for you, Josh McCoon. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to hear from Tanner Health System, and we'll be back, everybody, in 60 seconds. So stick around.
At Tanner, we're advancing health throughout West Georgia and East Alabama because we know that exceptional care isn't based on how many patients we serve, but how well we serve them. That's why we're focused on quality, delivering the best possible care for our patients. It's why we're expanding our clinical services and building new facilities to serve our growing community. And it's why we're looking beyond our hospitals and medical practices to develop sustainable wellness and preventive health programs in our region. What makes a hospital great has changed. It's not how many beds we have. It's how well we care for the neighbors who need them. Delivering the right care to every patient, every time, is how Tanner is advancing health with medicine beyond measure. Learn more at tanner.org or find a physician on our medical staff by calling 770-214-CARE.
And welcome back to our last segment on Community Voice. We have about 8 minutes left with Josh McCoon. You still there, Josh?
I sure am.
Okay. Well, it's very nice to talk to you yet again after our last break. I was looking again at the information that your assistant sent us, and I'd like you to talk a little bit, if you will, about the statement that you are a staunch defender of conservatism and advocate of taxpayer rights. Tell us what you mean by taxpayer rights.
Well, you know, there are a couple of different things. I think in the Secretary of State's office, the number one thing I would mention to you is we charge a tax in the Secretary of State's office to professional license holders. If you're a nurse, for example, you pay an application fee and a new license fee to get that license, and then you pay a fee every year to get that license renewed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in our state, we have 550 complaints pending against the over 170,000 licensed nurses. And it's taking over 400 days to investigate and get a resolution to those complaints. And the reason for that is that tax money is being taken by the legislature and spent on other things. And I think it's a basic conservative principle that the money that's paid for a service ought to follow the service provider. So I'm going to be introducing a constitutional amendment as part of our legislative package next year that would lockbox or dedicate those license fee revenues so that we've got enough employees to do the job. Right now, we have a state employee who's asked to regulate funeral homes, cosmetologists, nurses, all at the same time, and being an expert in all of those different professions. And that, in my opinion, is an impossible task.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to solve that. And the way we do it is by taking the taxes that you pay and direct them to the purpose that you've paid those taxes, which I think is a bedrock conservative principle.
You might have mentioned this before, Senator McCoon, but you tell me what, or tell us what committees you've served on in your tenure in the Senate.
Sure. So I served for 4 years as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I currently serve as Secretary of Regulated Industries and Utilities. I've served on Economic Development and Tourism, Ethics, Insurance and Labor. I've also served on the Ethics Committee and the Banking and Financial Institutions Committee. over my 8-year tenure in the Senate.
What was your biggest fight while you were there?
You know, I think the biggest fight I had in the legislature, well, there were really two, if I am going to be completely frank about it. The first one was over ethics reform and limiting the amount of gifts that could be given from lobbyists to members of the General Assembly. That took 3 years.
Seriously?
To ultimately get a bill passed.
Really? You got that much pushback? That's...
Well, got an awful lot of pushback because people didn't like having a perk taken away. and then the fight that is still going on now is the fight over protecting the fundamental right of free exercise, religious freedom in our state.
Mm-hmm.
It took us 3 years to get a bill passed. Then, of course, Governor Deal vetoed the bill. I am gratified to say, as I'm leaving the legislature, that the four leading Republican candidates for governor have all signed a pledge that they will sign into law the religious freedom legislation that I've been championing the last 4 years. So I think that's going to resolve itself. It'll resolve itself after I'm out of the legislature. But those have probably been the two biggest high-profile fights I've been engaged in during my legislative service.
I've never understood why having read that legislation, the RFRA language, it seems really innocuous to me, maybe even just common sense.
Well, unfortunately, you made this point earlier, we've got to have a rational public policy debate. And when we allow the left to dictate the terms of the debate and they use emotionally charged language and demagogue an issue, you've got to have leaders who are willing to stand fast and say, well, wait a minute, that's not what's going on. You're totally mischaracterizing this issue. And you're exactly right. Anyone who takes a clear-eyed look at the bill will say, this is American as apple pie. Why would anybody have a problem with it? But folks on the far left, to serve their own agenda, have so twisted the language with some of their willing conspirators in the media that it made it very difficult to move the bill forward.
Well, okay, that's a great answer, and we have 3 minutes left, so I want to give those 3 minutes to you, Senator McCoon, to make your case. Invite everybody out to your event today. Take it away.
Well, come join us in Villarica today at 11:30. We're going to be out at Los Cowboys. We're looking forward to having hopefully a great crowd. You can check out more about me at joshmckoon.org. That's joshmckoon.org. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Josh McCoon. We're very excited about the opportunity to be the next Secretary of State. We want to make Georgia the fastest state in the nation to get a job and the toughest state in the nation to cast an illegal vote. And I'll just close by mentioning three points that I think people need to keep in mind when they decide who the Republican nominee should be for Secretary of State. First, can they do the job? As I've said in this interview today, I'm competent. I'm ready to go to work on day one. The second question is, can they win the general election in November? This is going to be a hotly contested election. The Democrats want control of our elections machinery for all the reasons I've mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You need somebody who can articulate our case and who can prosecute the case against the Democratic nominee in this race, whoever it is. You want to put your A player on the debate stage, and I would tell you that I'm that A player. Third and finally, you need somebody that you can trust to honor their promises. Anybody can come on a program like this and tell you they're the true conservative, they're for elections integrity. But you got to ask yourself, if you entrust me with this authority, am I going to do what I'm going to say I'm going to do? And all you have to do is look at the 22 state senators who've endorsed me, including my colleague, Senator Mike Dugan. They will tell you, if I make a commitment to the people of this state, I'm going to keep it. And so I think those are the three reasons that when May 22nd comes around, or if you decide to vote early starting on Monday, April the 30th, I sure hope that when you get to that Secretary of State's ballot, that you'll mark Josh McCoon for your Secretary of State to make Georgia the fastest state in the nation to get a job and the toughest state in the nation to cast an illegal vote.
Senator McCoon, thank you so much for taking time out and to talk to us. Thank you for planning to visit our neighbors in Villarica this morning, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, everybody, for being with us today on Community Voice. Have a wonderful day, and vote.